coming up next on The Old Mole. Our movie moles, Denise Morris and Fran Michel, are here to tell us about the 1970s film, now out on DVD, Killer of Sheep. Right after a bit more from Iretsu, this is Six Bump Billy Hillbilly Stomp.
Good morning. This is Fran Michel here with Denise Morris to discuss Charles Burnett's 1977 film Killer of Sheep, recently released on DVD. Made as Burnett's master's thesis for UCLA Film School, Killer of Sheep was not released commercially because he couldn't afford to pay for the music rights to the soundtrack, which he designed as a history of African American music and which includes blues, funk, classical, and ragtime. Restored and finally released on DVD for its 30th anniversary, the film has been widely praised. The main character is Stan, played by Henry Saunders, a slaughterhouse worker and a family man in Watts, Los Angeles, with two young children, a crumbling house he keeps trying to repair, and a wife he's too depressed to have sex with. We see a series of vignettes as friends and neighbors try to convince Stan to go in on a crime with them and get a dressing down from his wife about their misguided notions of masculinity. Stan and a friend buy a used engine to try to fix up a car, but the engine block cracks before they even get it home. Family and friends plan an outing to the racetrack, but the car gets a flat on the way and there's no spare. Interspersed with these vignettes are non-narrative scenes of Stan working at the slaughterhouse and kids playing in the empty lots of the neighborhood. This is, although it's an older film, was called one of the best films of 2007, and I think it's really still quite timely. Just yesterday, Barack Obama was making comments in honor of Father's Day about the importance of African-American men needing to take responsibility for being good fathers and the importance of individual responsibility. But I think this film really emphasizes that the question isn't so much individual responsibility as the larger context that people find themselves in and the possibilities that does and doesn't offer.
Yeah, the film is recognized as being one of the most important and least known American films, and that includes the director, Burnett, who is considered to be one of the greatest lesser known or least known directors. And back in the period of time which he was studying at UCLA, there was a group of folks who were a kind of multicultural group, we could say, who were looking at film and looking at Hollywood and looking at the representations of particularly African Americans, but not exclusively, and trying to figure out a way to kind of refocus and reinvent identities through film. And looking a lot at the anti-colonial work of Frantz Fanon and others, but also the film work that was being done. So there was Italian neorealism that had come into play post-World War II, dating even further back, the work of British documentarian, do you remember his
Grierson.
Name? Grierson,
yeah.
Who was doing these kind of real-life documentaries about working-class people. And then through the early part of the 60s, where Robert Drew was working with the Direct Cinema and Cinema Verite and the Sound Sync and all of these new technologies coming into play, it allowed this group of folks who were studying at UCLA to really kind of cook up some great ideas about how to reinvent the images of minorities and African Americans in film. And importantly, the film, although it's dated 1977, was actually filmed in 72 and 73, which is less than a decade following the rebellions in Watts in 1965. And the history of Watts is also very interesting. We wouldn't get that from the film necessarily entirely, but folks could do lots of research. That's what we did. And we discovered some great things. And this film is very much in the context of the Watts community and the kind of aftermath of the rebellions and the neglect and the continuing lack of opportunity.
Yeah, which is even exacerbated, is even made worse by actually some of the success of the civil rights movement, insofar as black neighborhoods start to lose their middle class and lose, you know, what shaky economic base had developed there. And so it's left to the working class and the poor. And it really, I mean, it's like Italian neorealism in being a sort of post-war landscape. The kids are always playing in these abandoned, in empty lots and abandoned buildings that look like they're, you know, they've been bombed out. So, I mean, you really get a sense of the whole neighborhood. And I think that also, that orientation sort of comes through in the way that the film is not strongly narrative driven and not strongly sort of focused on Stan. I mean, he's the main character, clearly. But, I mean, the very first scene in the film has characters who I don't think appear again later. I mean, so it doesn't start with Stan. It starts with this other family. And you know, some critics have seen that as, you know, this is a flashback to Stan's childhood, or maybe it's just another family in the Watts neighborhood. It's not really clear. But there's a sense of this, you know, this sort of broader community. And Stan is just sort of is our entry point or one of our entry points to that. But it's not just about his experience. It's about the way his experience is rooted in that whole community and the whole political and sort of despairing political atmosphere of the time.
And we should say that the thing that's, I think, important about the film and what is so amazing about it is that it was groundbreaking in its being made, and also it really is able to work with some very important issues and ideas. I mean, it's political, and it is non-narrative, but it communicates quite a lot. And I think sometimes, you know, we can get a little fuzzy with some of these, with some films that are made that don't, you know, people like plots and people like all these things. So it doesn't have that, but it is very capable of communicating, and it's structured in such a way creatively and intellectually to do that. And it also is very much going up against the current of the time, which were the blaxploitation films, which were elevating an individual and elevating masculinity as a reaction to all sorts of social forces, of course, that could be said to be emasculating.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Also individualizing. And so what this film does, and going off of what you were saying about Stan, is that he while we follow him to a degree, he is always a part of the landscape. He's always a part of the community. And that is what is so important to understand about the film, is that it goes against the current of the Hollywood film, in that there is not one person who can make something happen or change. And in fact, we don't see much change. It's not about that, you know, but that there's a larger community and forces at play that move people one way or another.
Yeah, and we see that sort of repeated current of things not happening. there's one moment when a bunch of people are getting into a car and they're all sitting there packed in, and you're sort of looking through the windshield and you think they're about to go somewhere, and then one of the guys in the car reaches through. It turns out there's no windshield. He reaches through and picks up a can of beer that's sitting on the hood. You know, that everybody's sort of ready to go, but there's no place to go.
No way to get there
because the engine breaks and the tire turns flat.
Right. And the car culture of LA is, yeah.
I mean, and one of the things that the film does, another way that it sort of fits in with, I think, larger sort of trends in African-American culture and discourse, is this idea of back home and the connections with having come from the South. Charles Burnett himself grew up in Watts but had been born in the South, and his family had moved to California when he was a child. And sort of that World War II era migration is really sort of the background to this, and the way that there are sort of moments when the music, which is great in this film, is really wonderful, and or sort of references to folklore and become these sort of moments of possible redemption or solace, or it's a still a source of strength when it can be accessed. And yet there's also this sort of push to, you know, don't act like you're from the South, and sort of chastising the kids for using phrases that make them sound like they're from the South.
Yeah, there also are, there's also great references or great imagery of some of the contradictions that are lived with. There's a great scene with a daughter who is playing with a white doll, and in the background is her mother putting on makeup and doing her eyelashes, getting ready for her husband to come home, who is this, you know, very discontent and disconnected person who is the character that carries all of that disappointment and uncertainty in the film. And so there's a real nice contrast. The little girl is playing and singing and seems to a degree carefree in the way that kids do. And the images overall of the kids playing are wonderful, and they seem to be kind of liberated from all of the crushing lack of opportunity and the uncertainties of their own future, and yet they're replicating in some ways these images that people were seeing about these quote unquote riots and the looting and all of these things. The kids are playing games where they're throwing rocks and they're fighting and they're doing all these things, they seem to then get along, and they're playing in the environment, which is the wreckage and the decay of their neighborhoods. You know?
Yeah, it's a wonderful film. You can get it at you can rent it at some of the local independent video stores like Trilogy or Movie Madness. It's available through the Multnomah County Public Library. You can put a hold on it and wait your turn. Killer Sheep by Charles Burnett. This has been Fran Michel and Denise Morris for The Old Mole.
Thank you.